someone said, "Why don't you just focus on football?" And I was like, "It's the beauty of being able to go to talk to a pro cycling team in Africa. The beauty of being able to talk to a footballer at Sheffield United. Kind of freedom that makes us kind of, you know, what we are."
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 102 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. If you're listening to Idea Lab on Monday, you will know the Entrepreneur Experiment community has gone live yesterday. It went live Wednesday, February 3rd, on my birthday. And what is it? It's going to be an online community for entrepreneurs in Ireland and listeners of the pod, so we can get together, share ideas, have a chat, hold each other accountable, and most importantly, help each other out. So if that's something you're interested in, go to MrGaryFox.com and you can join for only €49 per year. Now, today's episode was one I was so looking forward to. I am a massive sports fan, and it was a privilege to get to speak to Mr. Trevor Twomley, the founder of Sport Endorse. Trevor is one of the most experienced sports agents in Ireland, and he's also one of the nicest people I've ever met. So there's two, a killer combo. Trevor has launched Sport Endorse platform as well, which is connecting brands with sports stars all across the world. It is an incredible idea. It's only been launched very recently, but it is proving to be incredibly popular. If you're a sports fan, this episode is massively for you. If you're here for the regular entrepreneurial stuff, it's also massively for you. So without further ado, here's Mr. Trevor Twomley, the founder of Sport Endorse. Trevor, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm genuinely excited all week about this one. Since we spoke last week, I've been genuinely excited like a child about this one.
Okay, well, look, I'm pretty excited to talk to you. And yeah, I love being in this business, and happy to talk to you and tell you what I can and what I know so far in my coming on 5 years of sports representation.
I just put up on Instagram there. I was like, I'm about to chat to a lad with probably one of the coolest jobs in Ireland, outside of probably being a professional sports star. This is probably every young lad's dream. What do you do, Trevor?
I co-founder with a business called Sport Endorse. We're a full-service representation business. So we represent athletes, we represent brands, and rights holders and sports organizations. That's we've an offline, online business. Online is our platform that we can talk about. It launched in December. That's our online business. Offline then is contracts, PR, endorsements that need contracts, and all that kind of hand-holding stuff.
So everyone that's watched Ballers or Entourage is suddenly sitting up, listening, going, "Oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be a good one." How did you become? Yeah. How did you get into this?
Well, look, I work in Setanta Sports. I set up the ad department there in Setanta Sports way back. So I've always been monetizing sports, be it from Champions League to Premier League, horse racing, Formula One, cricket in India. It didn't really matter. We had a team that monetized it and sold it and connected the right brands, knowing demographics and all that is important. That was my, I suppose, I got hooked in sport. I was always sports mad anyway. I was always big into business. I was always into sales. So it just fell that way. Declan and I talked about setting up a sports business. We felt there was a gap in the market. You know, for a couple of years, it wasn't something that we kind of went, you know, let's do this in the morning. We had kind of chatted about it. We had worked together in Setanta. Heath's company, he worked for, sponsored some rugby that we were broadcasting in Setanta. And we got an opportunity. It's kind of one of those Irish stories where I was in a bar, and O'Brien's with a friend of mine on Leicester Street, and he said, "Guess who was in my office today?" I was doing his accounts, and I said, "Who was it?" And he said, "Such a boxer." And I said, "Right." So I just grabbed his tie, said, "Get me in there. We've an idea." So we went in, had a meeting, presented pitch deck in the following meeting in offices in Stephen's Green, and fast forward, you know, a pro debut fight. We were in Madison Square Garden to a sellout crowd, 20-foot screens around the garden. I'm thinking Muhammad Ali, all our adverts up there from our sponsors, sponsors on the shore, sponsors on the road, sponsors on the canvas, and we're ringside. And I go, "This is so cool." That was our first gig. Our first event was in Madison Square Garden. It's kind of hard to come back from that.
I was going to say, hold on. Your first deal, Madison Square Garden, like. Fill the gaps in for me. Back it up now. Go back about to that first meeting just after O'Brien's and tell me how you went from having a pint in O'Brien's, which is a great pint, by the way, to signing the boxer to then being in Madison Square Garden. How, did you have the business up and running or what? How did you know what to do, I guess, is the question.
It's very, for me, selling eyeballs, selling airtime, selling humans, knowing brands, it's all very natural. So I didn't, I knew Hotwood, I knew kind of if it was on ESPN to 100 million homes, there was a value to that.
Okay.
Sellout crowd in Madison Square Garden, there was a value to that. Michael Buffer calling out sponsors, there's a value to that. So I kind of, I knew that it would be sellable. It was on St. Patrick's Day. It was on in New York. It was an Irish boxer. It had all the stuff, even though, you know, for what we did for a debut fight for a boxer was unheard of, I would say. But and he was a big name too. Okay, so
it, we're it all kind filling of it in. We all know who it is. It's okay.
Yeah, and so there you go. That's and it wasn't. It was graft. I mean, I think Declan built tons and tons of decks trying to pitch this out the right way, and we had to kind of tailor bespoke packages. And but there was great learning in it. It was great. Like we learned a lot. We so much in that first event, and fights to follow. That you know. Some brands would attach themselves to boxing, some will not. Some will attach them to rugby, some will not. Some like rowers, some like soccer players. It all depends. Just know your market, I think, and know what you're going after, and know your brand. And it was tough, but it was very rewarding. We made some money and we said, right, we're going to stick at this.
You said you learned a lot. How did you, because I think that's the thing that people struggle with, that initial gap of knowledge, because I think sometimes we mistakenly think, oh, well, I definitely do this. I think a lot of people do as well. You put people on pedestals, you know, successful business people, and you kind of go, oh, I just don't know how they know all that. Like, how did you bridge that gap? You already had a lot of industry experience. Your work coming out from a strong point, but how did you bridge that gap between what you knew and what you didn't for that first fight?
Look, it was graft. It was hard work. It was asking the questions, asking the right questions, asking the wrong questions. Yeah. There's a lot of learning in that and putting it out there. But when you have your backstory, your narrative, Madison Square Garden, ESPN, you're on RT, it's on this channel, it's on this channel globally, it's, you know, it becomes a little easier. The gap being bridged, what could I say? I mean, look, it's the gap would have been that it was just new and to adjust your sales pitch. Whatever your new product was, and your new sports property was. That bit, though, I always find easy. Don't always succeed, but I'm well able to pitch it the right way.
Yeah, because you clearly have this way about you, even from just chatting to you last week and today, you clearly have this way about you. I'd buy what you're selling. But how did you get over that initial, like, you know, people ask you, like, oh, who are your other clients? Did that come up or did you address it or how did you get around that?
No, look, I think... You have to be able to take rejection in our business. If you can't take the no's, you might as well not even get into it, right? So I don't, that's water for ducks back. We move on to the next thing. You know, you always have to stay humble in that you're only as good as your last deal.
Yeah.
You're all, like, that's what keeps you humble, keeps you fresh.
Yeah.
We picked up athletes who were looking for help quite easily. Like it wasn't, after there was one box, then it was two boxes, then it was a roar. I mean, we had 30 or 40 athletes in the space of 6 months who needed help. And that's kind of that was the key to it. It was, you know, they weren't being serviced in a certain way in the endorsement space. We came in and we said, look, we'll try and help you.
And was that a gap in the market that was there or, you know, because that's a phenomenal amount of people to get in such a short space of time. Like, what do you think was there? Was there just the gap not been served?
Look, I think there's a few people doing this in Ireland and kind of concentrate on rugby, not so much in the endorsement space. Yeah, it's not. Like, if you think of the big agencies, IMG, Wasserman, and all of them, they're big into the contract stuff. They don't really care about if you get an Adidas boot, sorry. Like, they're not, it's not really their space. So yes, and you know, it's from that, it was kind of ringing around looking for a deal for something to do a talk for €1,500. We said, what if there was a platform we could do that? Instead of me making six calls, I said, like, you know, we don't mind making the calls, but, you know, what if we could facilitate that via a platform or an app? And that's that's where it came from. It was really just trial and error. And, you know, it's not really sustainable to keep, if you're going to be making six calls for a talk for 15 quid, why don't we just put that business onto the platform and try and concentrate on building our business in other areas, be it offline or sports rights or whatever it is.
And bring me back to the kind of the early days after Madison Square Garden, after that high. What was your next strategy?
We definitely just thought, like, look, we're onto something, you know. So we then started from organically building our base, calling, meeting, building our network. Who do we know in football? Who do we know in rugby? How can we get in here? And we did it organically, and we just worked really, really hard to build our base. And for every athlete you get, you need to build, you know, or for every five athletes, you need to get one or two companies to sign up too.
Yeah.
So you've got to build your, you know, they go hand in hand. You need the athlete. What you need in sports representation, you need the athlete, and you need the brand and the connections. Like that's I know it's kind of sounds simple, but that's really what it is. So we just got down and grafted and had a plan. We put a plan in place to target, you know, so we knew that a lot of disciplines weren't represented. We talked to stakeholders, we talked to people about, you know, what were the issues that we're facing, you know, and Ireland's a small country. We thought, look, we built our business in Ireland. We have the intention of scaling it into America and UK and beyond and South Africa. But Ireland's a good place to learn because people are good. People are kind of good with their information, good at letting you in on stuff. And so we did have a plan, and it was to scale fast, and it was to build up our, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what do we do here? So we just went at it, and important that we found out about the athletes. It's important that you have empathy with the athletes. It's a tough business. If you're trying to get to the Olympics, you're running on small finances. You get to understand them, know what they're about. So case by case basis. But that was all part of our growth to where we are today. And you know, we think it's working. As I said, we've over 550 athletes.
In how many years did you say? 550 athletes in how many years?
We're 4 years now, coming into our fifth year. We set up in November 2016. But look, the platform is live since December. There's opportunities going through it. I have brands looking, picking up 7-8 ambassadors at a time. So we know that it's right. Mm. We now just need to bring it to the next level. And the next level is bringing it into countries that don't have this idea or are not doing it properly. And so we're at a key juncture, really. We're raising investment at the moment, selling equity in the company to bring it to that next level. But we have a formula that we feel works, that does work. We've MVP'd the platform last year. 25,000 went through that. Okay, this is something over a month period. I think we're going to bring this to the next stage. And what has COVID done? I mean, there's no sport the first 6 months. It was like,
well, okay, you anticipated one of my questions. Yeah.
Oh, like, sorry.
We may as well address. No, you're fine. We may as well address the elephant in the room. Like, so.
Yeah.
We'll jump back and forward a bit because we'll go back and we'll go forward. But bring me up to COVID then. I was our literally climbing the walls with growing. No sport.
Our revenues were growing, Gary, 30% year on year. So we were going nice and steady all the way through. Yeah, so COVID happened and, you know, sports stopped. And we just knuckled down and we said, right, we need to start thinking. It fast-tracked our platform. You know, we got it. We concentrated on getting that done. So it was investment time. It was, you know, bringing your product, building your assets to have you ready post-COVID. No, we're still in it.
Yeah.
But things started to come back into play. Like the last 6 months, opportunities start coming again. Deals start coming in again. It was tough the first 6 months. So we're definitely down in revenue in 20. But we have a platform that is live.
When did you start working on the platform? Because it just seems like the timing was quite, I won't say opportune because it's never an opportune time for something like this, but it seems like the timing kind of lined up for you guys.
Yeah, we didn't kind of have COVID in mind when building it. But But I suppose it was the year before we built the MVP. So right. Last year was kind of the, you know, getting it from MVP to version one, you know. But COVID has brought opportunity, you know. the harder you work, the more you ask, the more you put yourself out there. You know, we picked up the agency for Team Quebec ASOS, South Africa's or Africa's first pro cycling team. That happened during COVID. You know, I picked up the phone to John Egan from Sheffield United. I said, you know, I have an endorsement deal for you. Got quite close to him, got another endorsement deal for him. So these things only happen if you just keep working hard. You know, I always remember, and we're going back further now, and sorry, Gary, I always remember when Setanta had I suppose, collapsed in the UK, and we were still selling in Dublin.
Yeah.
And ESPN were putting up the Premier League signs, and we were taking them down, and they had won the rights, and we were just still selling. I was presenting out in a hotel out in the north side, like, going, you know, we're great.
Yeah.
You just have to keep going. You have to keep selling, keep talking, and of course it's tough, but you know what? Work hard and leave nothing behind, you'd be all right, you know.
I literally wrote that in an email to a very good mutual friend of ours, Pat, in Boys and Girls there this morning. I was just saying that I'm not smart, but I'll keep turning up every day, and that's pretty much half the battle. Like, that is what you're saying there is bang on, and that's kind of my philosophy as well. How did you learn that? Because that's kind of a very difficult trait to get.
Working hard. Look, I suppose
just even turning up and just doing it on repeat. How did you get over that fear of rejection and that initial kind of like sting we all feel?
Yeah, I think the Sunday Tribune newspaper would do that to you. I mean, we were out once a week, and you had your business section going out on a Friday, and you had to make 50 or 60 calls a day. And that 50 or 60 calls a day are traveling to Donegal for a business feature, or traveling down to Wexford or Cork or Kerry, or didn't really matter. You were meeting people, hundreds of people all the time, and calls all the time. And they weren't always yeses. In fact, it was quite the latter. You were a kind of a niche newspaper in a bigger market.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of that rejection or that those, you know, and then you build up confidence from when you get the yeses and you get the, you know. So I would say definitely my work in the Sunday Tribune and Setanta Sports as well would have kind of stood to me setting up my own company. Yeah, would I have done it in my mid-30s? Probably not. I think, you know, if you talk about, I know we said last week, 4 years an entrepreneur, you need 12 before you make it or something. But I still think I needed all that knowledge and all those mistakes and learnings to do what we're doing now. I definitely think it's standing to me now, and be able to come up with new ideas, come up with new strategies for athletes, find out more about them in detail, and just... Yeah, that I would think those two companies, and I've always worked hard my whole life. It's not something that I'm afraid of. And then you just keep going. It gets tiring sometimes, but you got to keep going.
I think we were talking about like entrepreneur years. I think it's like dog years. So I think four is by 4 by 7. I think that's, I think one entrepreneur year is like 7 normal years.
Okay. At 12 years then, do you stop becoming an entrepreneur? Is it a bit like the president? You're kind of always the president, or you?
Yeah, I think you're always the president.
Or do you become just successful or unsuccessful? How does it work then?
Yeah, who knows? I'll tell you when we get there. You'll be able to tell me in a year or two first. Bring us behind the scenes, because sports is just such a, I'm a massive sports fan. Anything, I'd pretty much watch most things. Bring us behind the scenes.
Gary?
Football's my main one. That would be my main, that'd be my main vice. So when the Premier League was gone, I was in the depths. Yeah. It was just something to not look for, something to look forward to. I love having a match on a Sunday or even a Monday night just to go, I cannot wait to watch United Liverpool. Like last Sunday, just that was like an anchor, especially now when you're like, you know, you don't have holidays or stuff like forward. I just find sport is such an outlet and such a distraction. And it's something you kind of, you become, it's part of your identity, you know?
It's a new religion. Sport is a new religion.
You used that line a few times. Bring us behind the scenes of a pro athlete and kind of the insights into their lives. Because I think that there's probably, we talked about a little bit off air in terms of, we kind of probably, you think of pro athletes, you think of probably the top, you know, 10 pop to mind in your sport, you know, the Johnny Sextons, the, you know, the Roy Keanes, the people of that stature, you know. But talk to me a little bit about the people, say, not below, because they're not below, but someone who doesn't have the high profile of, say, one of those players. What is their life like? And in terms of what kind of deals do they get? Because I'm sensing from what you said earlier, a lot of them just aren't represented. They're kind of in the background, just doing their thing. They might have a serious profile in the sport, but outside of that, maybe not so.
Look, you have to, it's a tough life for them, right? So it's understanding that They're training so hard. You know, they're trying to get to the Olympics. They're trying to become professional. They are professional, but their brand isn't right. So it really is a case by case basis. I would say, for what kind of deals are they getting? I mean, look, nutritional deals, brand deals. A deal came in this morning for a professional basketballer, Corey Craig, to do a skills set, or, you know, on a platform. It really depends. You know, we did a shirt deal for Prince Amu Kamara, Chicago Bulls. It really what they want. I always say to them, in terms of their own brand, you know, don't tell me like Rolex or, you know, that's fine. But your form here, doesn't really kind of match your profile.
Yeah.
Tell the truth. Be authentic. And that's when brands will match you to, because, and if you care and if you work hard for the brand, they'll come back. We've one athlete, he's on his fourth year with a brand because he turned up on time. He smiled, he talked to them, and he cared, and he posted at the right time, and he did the job properly. Mm-hmm. So it's, look, for an athlete, what do they need to do? They need to win. They need to be the best they can be on the pitch, on the field, and on the track, you know. So they should really concentrate on that. And then we do everything else. You know, we help them with their commercial stuff, their PR, their brand, their contracts. So we should alleviate that pressure. We do alleviate that pressure from them. Some athletes don't want to talk in front of a crowd. They want to do public speaking. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. What brands would you like? I really like this brand from a nutritional point of view. Can you reach out to them? So yes, we can. But can you do this for them? Mm. Will you do, you know, so it's about teaching them as well. We're very much about teaching or educating the athletes to value themselves. You know, and I think in Ireland, as a kind of a relatively new professional country, you know, that's important, that athletes do value themselves the right way. So we're going to educate. We do educate athletes what they're worth. If they've got X thousand followers, you should be charging that per post.
Mm.
What knowledge is out there? We have a rate card. We're probably the only agency that has a rate card. Same with the companies. Companies are quite new in Ireland. It's not too new in the UK and in America. But we, you know, what do we ask for? You know, and that's why the platform is great. Actually, the company can go on. There's a talk going out with an athlete this week. My budget is X. Can you do it for X? And the athlete will say, "Well, look, I got Y the last time." Yeah. Can you meet them and say yes, an agreement? You know, so that's just, it's about kind of joining the dots, educating them. They're not supposed to know about the commercial world. They're not supposed to know about that side of it. And that's why we have jobs, right? That's what we're professional. We know how to do that and monetize it. So any athletes out there or companies who are listening to this, who want to kind of know more, just go on to Sport Endorse and talk to us, ask the question. We have a great team around that supports both athletes and companies. And in terms of if they want to find out more about the platform, we're having regular webinars with athletes, for athletes separately and for companies separately. Mm. Teach them how to kind of post their opportunities or engage. And the one thing we found out is it doesn't matter what professional team you're in, if you don't tell the company that you like, that you're willing to work for the product and sell yourself a bit. And if the company doesn't sell themselves a bit, there's not going to be a match.
Yeah. You see it all the time. You see athletes kind of posting stuff on social and they're just like standing outside the local garage, big tick heading them. And they're like, you know, they've no interest in being there. Just did it because it was the only offer they got and clearly weren't happy about it. And you can tell straight away, as you said, their authenticity, people's bullshit radar is so high now. So high that they can smell something straight away, even a whiff of it, they're like, oh, I don't really get that. So I explain to me exactly what the platform does, because we're kind of leading up to it up to now. I think it's an absolutely unbelievable idea. Just explain exactly what it does.
Thanks, Gary. Platform connects athletes with brands and opportunities, and sports organizations too. Simple as that. Sports organizations or rights holders can get the sponsors and post what they've got on offer to brands as well. So it's a simple concept. An athlete uploads their profile to media, tells a bit about themselves. I had a situation recently with an athlete who wanted to be a pundit. You know, and we have broadcasters up there who have registered on it. And I said, well, if you want to be a pundit, here is a place you can showcase your talent on the platform. You upload your videos talking in front of a camera. And that, you know, so whenever you're trying to, whatever you want to do post-career, in the middle of your career, at the start of your sporting career, here's an opportunity for you to talk to brands and talk to clubs and talk to the whole commercial world that's out there that you weren't aware of. But the best thing and the most important thing is that you portray yourself in the best way. No point putting it up. Don't look at social media. Don't talk about yourself. Picture yourself. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So the platform, yeah, that's what it does in simple format. I mean, look, it's a great bit of kit. We spent a lot of time and money on getting it right to version one. So there's a good engine on it. It can, you can book your opportunity through it. If you're a company, if you want someone to do a post or do a speak or a talk, public speaking, it all can be done through. You can put your payment through it. You can have your accounts at the end of the year. It's all there. It's a great place as well for companies. And we've seen it just in the last 2 weeks where companies are just picking out athletes and connecting with them and talking to them and engaging with them and selling them, their wares to them and vice versa. So, yeah, it's live. It's available in 120 different countries. It can be downloaded to your phone in app format. Yes, and it's working. It's trading. People are doing stuff on it. We need to bring it to the next level now. But we think we've a good base for it, and we want to. And we have a plan. Like we know that in say 3 years we'll have X thousand athletes and X thousand companies on it, and keep going.
What struck me with Jamie Heaslip on the pod there about 2 or 3 months ago, and what struck me was how focused, how laser focused he was during his career. He talked about it as a circle, and he had just different parts of the circle he would focus on. And during his career, on his off days, he would have meetings lined up with this person, this person, this person. He was saying the lads used to be always slagging him at training, going, "Oh, who are you off to meet today? Oh, Jamie, off for more meetings. Are you off for more meetings?" And he's like, "Yeah, lads, I am, because the doors are open now and they won't always be open." And I think that's the beauty of your platform as well, is that it gives people that transparency to see. I went on and had a play around with it, spent probably an hour just playing through it. It's just transparent, and I love that, because you kind of see, it probably lifts the veil for a lot of athletes, because I think what you said there earlier about they're focused, like they don't have, you know, 2-3 hours a day to be on mesh and brands going, "Hey lads, am I available for this, that and the other?" Just don't have it, and they've no interest, and even probably undersell themselves going, like of some of the garage thing, probably go, "Oh, this local guy, oh yeah, Grant, yeah, I'll just get a few hundred quid off him." It just cuts out everything and just gives a total layer of transparency to what is probably a bit of an opaque kind of business, I'd imagine.
Correct. And that's really important, that it is transparent. Like our company, the integrity of our company, the transparency of our company is really, really important. And the platform is built on that basis, that you can see what the price is.
Yeah.
You can see what it is, and that is the rate. And by the way, you know, if this is your worth, and you can tell them that's your worth, and that's what you. So the transparency is what's vital about the platform, that actually everyone can see what's going on, and it's there, and there's no hiding, and it's so, "Oh, that price is too much." You know, the company in Ireland, especially, the brand will have a certain budget to do an event or do a gig, and you know, and part of activation will be X, and then the athlete will be Y, and that's it, and that's, so it is transparent. And look, they can, you know, they'll say, "Well, can you talk to this person?" No problem. They go offline, then we can pick up the phone and talk to the brand as well. But I think for an athlete, and it's certainly a brand, if they're busy on Friday and I'm no speaker for Monday, and they go on and they go onto the app and they go Dublin, and there's James Lowe, book.
Yeah.
It's perfect. So easy, seamless, transparent. That's kind of the key things about it.
Look, that's the way the world is going. You know, people order their food via the app. People just don't want, and the world is transparent now. You go on social media, you can pretty much see what anyone's earning, what they're doing, who they're with, what they've done in the past. So I think some people are still trying to project this image of living a certain way or doing this thing a certain way, or it all comes out in the wash anyway. You know, there's not. And I think the sooner people embrace that, the better. And I think it's businesses like yourselves who are kind of probably going, what would have been a traditional, you know, smiling and dialing, getting on the phone, connecting this guy with that guy and that guy with that guy. You know, while some people would think, "Oh, he's going to do himself out of a job." Not really. If it's going that way anyway, and you're controlling the platform, you've only just opened your market up to hundreds of thousands of new customers.
Look, 5-10% of people will reject the platform, you know, but 90% are going to embrace it. And so far, 90% of people who we talk to, be it agents, athletes, companies, are going, "Yeah, I'll have a bit of that." Okay. because it's easier. It's transparent. It's easier, and it's a new revenue line. It wasn't there before. Yeah. Like, it's incremental business for the athlete, for the agent, for the, you know. So they should embrace it. Everyone who doesn't should embrace it. But anyone we talk to, like, we have a great network in America where they uploaded 22 NBA and NFL athletes. They embrace it.
Yeah.
In England, the same X amount of soccer players, rugby players. So most people are embracing it, and it's going to become a way of life. I'm sure about it. And look, it's there. And if people, as I said, if people want to register, it's free to register. Very important. It's free to register at the moment. Yeah.
But you can actually go on and see. You can see what's happening. You can see what the brands are doing. You can see what the athletes are doing. Even if you're just a sports fan, it's just damn interesting to go on and have a look. So you have a little sideline there and voyeurs like me going on just to be nosy. What has surprised you so far with the platform? What has kind of been something? Because when you dream something up in your head, you're like, oh, this is so cool. And this is going to go this way. And this is going to go that way. And then you launch and you're like, oh, didn't think that was going to happen.
What surprised me is everything can feed into us, you know? Like Team Quebec, we did that partnership offline, and then a week later, there's 27 pro cyclists on the platform,
right,
looking to do ambassador deals. So it's how it can scale, you know. Like I mentioned, an athletic federation in Europe rang me, they wants to upload 500 athletes on it. So I knew it could scale fast. It's trying to actually, okay, get in touch with Ukraine. Are we able to put those 500 athletes on in the next 10 days? It's kind of, so it's dealing with those pressures, but they're good pressures to have. Mm. Obviously, there's teething problems, and you're looking at stuff that happens starting out, and that's okay. And we're working on that on a daily basis, and the dev team on that. But it's the how quick it can scale, Gary, is what I'm kind of more interested in. The amount of people who are interested in it, the amount of companies who are just, and we've a kind of a small team putting out social posts, and the amount of traction it's getting. I told you last week I was talking about a certain brand that wants to upload to do 14 endorsement deals with athletes, and Declan said that's fine because I have a nice skater in Croatia who just wants to sign up. So like, we did a post and a rugby player called us in Pretoria. You know, he needs representation. The fact the clerk said that we were doing a lot of good things in Europe. Like, it's that kind of, you know, it is helping us offline more than we could have probably imagined, if you get me.
Yeah.
The big thing is to basically bring that to actually a transaction, you know, to get. Mm. So we have to just keep working hard at that, teaching brands how to use it. But it's pretty foolproof. Like, it's pretty, you saw it yourself, it's easy to use.
Yeah, it's a nice UI. It's very clear what I'm doing here. Who am I? I'm a company, I'm a brand. Okay, I'm posting this, I'm posting that. I think people are now way more savvy in terms of they're used to using marketplaces. They're used to using Airbnb. They're used to using, you know, Deliveroo, Uber. Marketplaces are a real sexy business because of exactly what you said. You know, it can scale exponentially, which it can. Did you have any difficulty in the fact that it's two-sided? You know, when you launch a marketplace, you need customers and you need suppliers. So in this case, you need athletes and you need brands. Did you have any difficulty matching, you know, getting enough of either one first?
No, like, I'm sorry, the first week it went live, there was 130 athletes and 50 companies registered.
Right.
Okay. If we could keep that ratio going, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So obviously it slows down and as we, you know, but no, I don't think so, because you're solving a problem for the brand as well. Mm. You know, if they need a speaker or they need an ambassador, you're solving a problem for them too. It's a different pitch. You know, the athletes will love it. It's easy to get athletes on because they want the endorsement deals and they want them quick. The company needs to get used to it. No, we've never had any doubt of what we were doing with it. You know, and the fact that there's over 100 companies on it and 550 athletes and three or four signing up, like, three opportunities came in this morning. They came in last night while I was sleeping. So
that's
like,
you finally hit the dream, isn't it? Making money when you sleep. That's the entrepreneur dream.
Well, if it was 33, I'd say something. But yeah. But so that's kind of, you know, that's what we got to do. We have to populate it, and we have to, you know, that's the job, is getting it coming and getting athletes loving it and getting brands loving it and learning what their requirements are, learning what the athlete's requirement is, what the brand needs, what, you know, how they can use the platform best for their company in a fast, efficient, seamless way that's transparent. So you gotta do all that. But that's the fun in it, you know.
Who is your dream client? So when you open the laptop some morning now in June or July this year, so and so has signed up for the platform. Who is that?
Oh, look, I don't know.
Go on, go on. We all have that. You know yourself.
Yeah, pick a sport.
Football. nice and broad one for you.
Yeah. Look, any of the big names, you know, we're a business as well. We're not, of course, we're servicing a part of the market. But yeah, look, would you turn away Tom Brady? Would you turn away Cavani? Would you turn away Wang Yang? Like, no, right? It's not. Salah, I might turn him away. No, depends on the sport, but I think we're able to deal with at any level at this stage. We've learned so much in the short space of time that we would I think we're going to get it. We have NBA and NFL guys on Torrey Craig, Evan Engram. These are people that we're working with multi-million contracts. So it's not as if we don't have every athlete is elite, Gary, which is important to state. Mm-hmm. If you're badminton player like Nat Nyan, you also want your gold medal or your dream to play as your elite. And if you're a footballer, you're elite, whether you're making a pro contract or not, we look after everyone the exact same.
Yeah.
And that's kind of important to say that. But would I like to get a player like Tom Brady probably towards the end of his career? Maybe not. Maybe 10 years ago, I'll have him, yeah.
What sports... what happened, I think, when all the sports got cancelled in terms of, you know, you see the Olympics and you see the Euros and you see all this stuff just getting pushed out indefinitely. I mean, people have been training for that probably their entire lives. How did that impact and what did you see from the outside?
We did our own, we started our own podcast for the athletes just to kind of, and Nat Nyan was being interviewed on it. He's the badminton player. I kind of just brought him up there. And great kid.
That's a great idea. So an internal podcast for the athletes, is it?
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Basically,
that's a really good idea.
Yeah, just to push it out that they're there, what brands they want to... It's just kind of to learn a bit more about them, really, and tell the public about them a bit. So series one is launched. But anyway, but he said, you know, that he was, you know, actually suits him down to the ground.
Really?
Yeah, because he... is going to be a year stronger, a year more experienced.
Yeah.
And he's going to be up against it, like in terms of what, you know, that he was a year stronger, a year better. So I think that the athletes can focus quite easy. They can refocus and just keep training. It's obviously hard for them. Jason Quigley is another boxer we represent. He's fighting in Fantasy Springs in California on February 13th. He was to fight in Moscow in January. Mm. He rang me to say, like, yeah, it's postponed. The Russian boxer got COVID, the co-main event. So he just trains harder for the next month. He knows he's going to get out. He's had a year of nothing. So he has to keep tuned. Himself and Andy Lee are training all the time, keeping mind focused. You just got to keep at it. Of course, it's tough for them. You know, they've trained to get to the Olympics or whatever. And you know, I know that I can imagine if you're a rugby player and you're on the bench, there's no games on or you're not getting any game time and kind of going twiddling your thumbs, you know. So I'd say it's tough, but they are very focused and they're so driven. Like, that's what I see about them. They have a different level altogether, you know, in terms of their attitude towards what they're doing and their end goal, you know.
That's so interesting because I think I always try to equate sports. I always read in sports books and try to always equate it back to business. I think that level of focus and discipline is just, it's supernatural. I think it's so learned over such a long period of time, especially now when we're nearly a year into this. I think we all need that little kind of injection of motivation and injection of kind of focus again. I was just curious from an athlete point of view, how they were sustaining that, especially I watched the behind the scenes Tottenham documentary there on Amazon Prime. And it was just interesting to see them working at home because they were such creatures of habit, you know, they come up at a certain time to the training ground and then they leave a certain time. It's interesting to see how they were managing that from home. How have athletes kind of managed, guys that you deal with, how have they managed with COVID in terms of been taken out of that routine, out of that support structure, I guess?
Some of the lads in the Irish team and the Leinster team were getting the weights out to the house as well, you know?
Yeah.
So look, no different to everyone else. It's difficult for them, like ourselves, tough. You know, I could be in Donnybrook now having my coffee and I'm not, and in my my daughter's bedroom talking to you. But
I was wondering why you were such a Mickey Mouse fan. I was going to bring that up at the end. But for people listening
that
to this,
any Zoom call, that Mickey Mouse is great for me, man. I've even done deals with Mickey Mouse in the background there.
Good topic of conversation.
Yeah, it's my daughter's Mickey Mouse line, but I'm going to own it today. Yeah, look, it's been tough for them, you know, but we just try and help them as best we can. Mm. Be it, you know, if they need to, you know, in terms of their endorsements or whatever we need to do to get them through it, you know. But most of them really are pretty good. Like, they're just working away.
Is there any kind of trends or anything you're seeing kind of cropping up out of COVID? Obviously, things like your platform are now exploding because it's all seamless. It's all done online. They go onto their laptop or their iPad or their phone and they can literally do endorsement deals. What are those trends you're seeing in kind of the sports industry and the sports business that are perhaps maybe been sped up by COVID or just starting to come to fruition anyway?
Everything. Deals are done via Zooms. I had a call there last week or the week before. I was on it from here. There was a lady in Rome. There was a guy in New York. There was a girl in Belarus. And there was someone from Balbriggan on it. So, like, everything has been... So, talks have been done through Zoom. Deals have been... I the market finds its way. It might be the same level, but certainly... Deals happen. Talks still going on. It's a Zoom call versus talking in front of 200 people in a crowd. It's so that kind of whole, the whole Zoom thing has opened up a world to us and to companies as well, I'd say. There is a positive to it. Obviously, in my business, you need to be meeting people and going to games. And like, there's nothing better than I would like to go and watch some football now and look at footballers. Like, you know, but I can't. So, but there's a side where I wouldn't have got that network only for COVID of meeting the people in New York, Belarus, Rome. So those trends are obviously happening everywhere where, you know, it's quite comfortable for companies to book talent and do it via computer, you know. Mm. And obviously our platform is going to be an unbelievable trend. It's we're very, now that it's kind of, there's no more touchy meetings, I think our platform is a great place to book stuff. And now more than ever, you're going to see a lot more of that, you know?
Yeah.
The skill thing this morning with Tory Craig, that's all. He's doing a video from his bedroom of the skill and he's sending it back here. Mm. And someone is uploading it and giving it to people. Like, that's all new.
Yeah, I think we talked about it earlier in terms of people thought, oh, I could never do my job from home, or I could never do it via Zoom, or, oh, it's easy for you, work from home as a, you know, where suddenly like, you're like, no, all that is gone now. It's either, it's like water, finds a way. Business always finds a way. What would you, I have two kind of final questions.
The other trend, sorry, Gary,
go ahead.
The Brexit thing is not good for football. It's, you know, kids can't leave Ireland out until they're 18.
Really? I didn't know this. I was just reading about the January transfer market, and obviously, you know, clubs have kind of frozen that they're like, we can't do that deal and we can't do this. And Newcastle, DeAndre Yedlin lost his visa because of Brexit. You know, so young Irish talent won't be able to go to the UK anymore.
Until they're 18.
Wow. That's in football terms,
it's too late, right? But so what do you do then? You build relationships with clubs in Europe.
Germany, France, I often think that.
I often think that a young footballer is better off going to Anderlecht, getting his game time. He goes into a factory in the UK. They're back home in 6 months. So there is an opportunity in that as well, is that think outside of the UK.
Yeah.
You might end up back there at 22 or 23, but you need game time. It's no different to air miles. You need to get on the pitch. You need to learn your craft. So, but yeah, Brexit and COVID couldn't have come at a better time together, you know?
Yeah. But it's kind of stuff like that I'm super interested in, and business people are always trying to see, well, where's the trend? Where's the angle? I think Brexit is, we kind of snuck by us, I think, because with COVID and everything, you were so distracted by everything. Brexit was occupying everyone's mind last year and then kind of snuck by and happened. And I was like, oh yeah, that's after happening. And it was only when I was starting to do a few things, I was trying to import stuff from the UK there last month. And I was like, Jesus, there's an extra percent charge, and then there's going to be this, and then it's going to take that long. I'm still waiting for it. I'm like, God, I didn't even think of this. But what you said there about the going to Europe, that's really interesting. You see teams like Borussia Dortmund, Leipzig, Salzburg, they're making a whole industry out of that now. That's what they thrive on, is they're bringing in kids. You know, a lot of the UK kids, they're hoovering up a lot of the talent that's 16, 17, should be getting in a first team, but is not going to get in a million miles of the Chelsea or the City or whoever it is first team. Because as you say, it's a factory. They bring in a couple of hundred, might bring through one or two.
The English clubs are the ones that are going to lose out. Players, yeah. The Irish players, obviously, but there's a percentage of Irish players will make it, a percentage that won't. But there are other countries. Yeah. There are other opportunities.
Yeah. And they're close as well. What's wrong with,
so close. Why not look at France? Look at Denmark. You know, go to Norway. That's what's happening. A lot of agents are looking at other countries now and seeing what's happening over there and what's the. And for us, it's important that the kid isn't thrown into a factory. Mm-hmm. That he gets an education. That education is number one, and then he can do the club, and then he can go in early, and he can train, and we can look after his accommodation and help him out and all that. So let's see how that plays out.
That's a really interesting trend. I have two final questions for you, Trevor. The last one is to recommend a book, so you can have a little think about that for a minute as you answer the next question. If you were able to talk to Trevor of 5, 6, 7 years ago, before you started your agency and Sport Endorse, what would you say to him?
I'd say get more money, invest more money. No. What would I say to him? I wouldn't change too much. Like, you can imagine, Gary, we were in the throes of it. We were Madison Square Garden, our first event, and our first sponsorship gig. So we kind of had the dream start. Look, there are more clever ways you can work. I'm sure about that. But I think I would probably, maybe have got into football a bit earlier. I can see what's involved in that. But generally, it's the amount of athletes we've talked to and brands we've talked to that is what Sport Endorse is. You know, I don't think there was any easy way of building our company apart from maybe some more deals during COVID. But I wouldn't change too much. I certainly would probably work more clever in terms of certain times. You can find yourself. But it was that kind of, someone said, why don't you just focus on football? And I was like, but it's the beauty of being able to go to talk to a pro cycling team in Africa. It's the beauty of being able to talk to a footballer at Sheffield United. It's that kind of freedom that makes us kind of, what we are. So, of course, we'd want to get the platform built a little earlier, but it took time to come up with the idea. But and actually, you quite rightly pointed out earlier, COVID has helped us finish it and get it to version one. So, we'll just keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the most common thing is that there's not a lot of would have changed, and you kind of tweak certain things here and there. But in general, you kind of have to start. You have to just make the mistakes, and you learn to go a little bit hard. You said something very interesting there, which I kind of want to draw attention to, is you have the ability to look at a lot of different things. And, you know, you weren't just reliant on, if you only had clients in the English Premier League and the English Premier League stopped in March and didn't restart for a year, you'd be kind of gonzoed. You'd be done. I think it's only right now that Irish businesses are looking at, well, we need multiple revenue streams. We need to have this. We need to have the UK. We need to have America. We need to have all these different revenue streams. Suddenly now the exposure to one thing, whether it's bricks and mortar, just not having a digital presence. I think it's kind of shown people that you need different revenue streams.
Yeah. And we always had a lot of different revenue streams in Satanta, right? It's not that we kind of came from, not that it came, Sport Endorse came from that model, but certainly your network is so vital. You need to have connections everywhere globally now. Because something happens, something like COVID happens, something like Brexit happens. And if the Premier League stopped, I'd look at golf and I'd be able to pick up the phone to someone. And we did, we got close to some golf people too. So it's about keep building, keep working. Building your network. Your network is vital to any success of a company, and being able to diversify and move when you have to and change. And we've been able to do that, I think, quite well.
Yeah, brilliant. One last question before you go. Has there been a book that's kind of shaped your kind of thoughts on business or even impacted you personally?
I'm starting to I read the Tiger Woods book there recently. I thought it was quite interesting, the whole thing.
That's a phenomenal, phenomenal yeah. book. You definitely recommend that one if you want, because I've read that and I just absolutely loved it.
It starts off obviously with the golf club and he drove into the pole and his first deal, like he won the three amateurs and his first deal was 60 million. Like yeah. I would say to athletes, that doesn't happen to everybody. Like, you know, he hadn't hit a golf club and he'd done 60 million deal. But just the flow and brilliance of the man, you know, and wasn't a Tiger fan before the book, by the way. Not that I was not a fan of him, but yeah. I just, his, you know, what he has done for the game, the championships he's won, the comeback kid. I mean, the Americans love that, right?
Yeah, but, I think everyone does. Everyone likes that kind of fallen hero. Oh, you know, he's come back. Oh, he's one of us. Not one of us, but, you know, he's human too. I think people like to see that fallibility and like to see that kind of like that not just that chink in the armor. No one likes someone that's too perfect. I think just that maybe is quite the other way, but it's an interesting book. From a psychology point of view, what it takes to be, we talked about the 1%, like to be the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. Like he was just on a different level. When you read that book, you just... to see other players.
His father had a big part in that. Like, you know, his dad made Tiger the way he was.
Yeah.
The robot that he was, the machine that he was, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, he was the first, I suppose, golf billionaire. You know, he took it to a whole new level. He surpassed Michael Jordan. But there was the other side to that was he was you know, he'd fragile mentally. He went off the rails. Absolutely, you know. But he's back. And do you think he's going to beat Jack Nicklaus's record?
That is a good question. Who knows with the world the way it is? Because like I was trying to make a prediction about the league. I was like, United are going to win the league this year because the world is so crazy that I think it's going to happen. I was trying to rationalize it to myself going, you know what? This could happen. Who knows? Yeah. Because the world is so crazy. Now, golf is one of those sports I think will come back a lot quicker. And it did come back a lot quicker. I was watching the Open there a couple of months ago and it was almost like normal. It's a bit weird. It was so quiet. But I think there's one or two left in him. I do think that he seems to be a bit happier.
Might match it. He's a bit happier. Yeah.
He just seems a bit happier. He just like... To see him play a couple of years ago, to watch back the highlights after reading the book, you're kind of going, wow, he was in such pain. And like you talked about it there, the price to be paid. There's a toll to be paid to be brilliant. And I think we see that with elite people. You were talking about the Maradona book there earlier. There's a price to be paid. You know, you can't have everything.
But if you believe the hyper, you build them. We're back to being authentic again. He wasn't himself.
Yeah.
You know, he had this facade. You know, but look, didn't he win something with his he had a broken tibia or something? Like his knee was broken,
his knee was smashed up
and he played on. I mean, Jason Quigley won his North American title belt with his hand broken in the second round. He went down to go the full distance. His hand was broken punching this guy. He said it was like icicles going through him when every time you hit him. Mm. But it meant so much to him. He kept going for the 12 rounds or whatever it was, and he won the fight, won the belt. But his hand was broken for 10 rounds.
Yeah. You see that in MMA quite a bit because it's such a physical sport. Obviously, they pick up injuries, and you'll hear them on the mic in the corner going, yeah, I broke my wrist. And out they go. You know, and they're like, my nose is gone. And out they go. And Mackenzie Dern a few months ago absolutely smashed her nose in about four different places, and she was like, how's my nose? And the coach's like, you're fine, don't worry about your nose. And out they go. But like that level, the right, you know, if I bang my knee,
the Tiger said, pain is just pain, you know.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book.
Maybe it's a hospital.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a great recommendation, the Tiger Woods book. It's even if you're not a sports fan, it's worth it just to see the level of focus and the level of how to get to the elite level. Trevor, thank you so much for coming on the pod. It was a fascinating...
Was that okay?
It was a brilliant chat. How can people learn a bit more about Sport Endorse and yourself?
Yeah, just go on to sportendorse.com if they want to register on the platform. It's platform.sportendorse.com.
Perfect.
And we're on all the social links. They can just check us out. And we're live and we're open for business. Yeah, pick up the phone too if you want.
Brilliant. go old school. Trevor, thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
If you made it all the way to the end, thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. As I said at the start, the Entrepreneur Experiment private community is now open. You can go and you can join. It'll be open for the next 2 days, and then we'll be closing it down until March when it'll reopen for new members. So if you are interested, head over there, join in, join the conversation, and help make 2021 the year that you either start your business or you take your business to the next level. I'll see you next Monday for the Ideal App.